Global Focus with guest Anya Briggs, psychic medium and experiencer, journalist, media and personal psychic consultant. Anya's media credits include ongoing appearances in the current 2012 third season of Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura on True TV. Trish Sheridan speaking. And this is a Global Focus. Our guest tonight, Anya Briggs, psychic medium. Now, Global Focus, with website at globalfocus.com, airs live on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network with anchor station UPRN 105.7 FM New Orleans. And check www.ufoparanormalradio.com for the several listening venues. Thanks to Joe Montaldo for making these programs possible. Now, this week's program features Anya Briggs, psychic medium and experiencer, journalist, media and personal psychic consultant, and blog. Anya is a channel. Her media credits include film, television, and many radio and internet programs. Anya will be appearing as the resident psychic advisor for the television series Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura in the show's season 3 in 2012. The programs will be broadcast in the U.S. on True TV. Discussion this evening will include Anya's field work and her efforts in successfully assisting others in finding answers to life path questions. Now, also, I just wanted to mention, Anya, a major hello to you from Jeffrey Pritchett of the very well-known show and popular program, The Church of Phoebus, which airs live Saturday evenings at from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Jeffrey Pritchett and co-host Guy Weddle are very popular on the network. They send you your greetings, and Jeffrey was just thrilled that you'd be on this evening. Now, enough of me. Welcome to the program. I'm thrilled you're going to be a guest.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Treat. The honor is completely mine. I am a huge fan. I will be shameless about it. I love your show. I've listened to it for quite some time, and the output and the quality is so consistent. And a big hello to Pritchett. He's been adorable and so kind and so supportive when he could have very easily chewed me up and spat me out in his articles, and he's been exactly the opposite. So I am very thrilled to be here, very thrilled to be on your show and on Joe Montaldo's radio network. Big fan.
Yes, Joe Montaldo also is a great fan of your work. Now, Anya, your research extends to several aspects of the paranormal and psychic and UFO and ET fields. Also, your psychic gifts are evolving, and what I so commend you for is you're a person who's not had your unusual experiences stop you from pursuing important personal goals and career paths. I want to first ask you about your Find Me group, but what would you like to say at the outset?
Oh, well, you know, I'm very happy to speak about Find Me. From the get-go, I do strictly volunteer work for an organization called Find Me, and their website is findme2.com. It is a group of cadaver dog units, search and rescue teams, and sites who work with law enforcement and the families and loved ones of missing people. We also work on cold case homicides. And it has been, without a doubt, one of the most gratifying, hugest honors that could ever be bestowed to me. I want to give a big hug and shout out to Kelly Snyder, who is the director of Find Me. And if you want to make a donation, they are a 503c, and they are currently accepting donations. It's all out of pocket. None of us get paid. And you can go to findme2.com. For all of that, and you can find out some information on a documentary that's currently being filmed that the producers may be coming east. I don't know if I'm in it yet or not, but they're still working out the details on shooting. There's a teaser trailer there, a 13-minute teaser trailer that also really brilliantly explains who the organization is and what all the members are all about. It's called Pounding the Ground, and you can check that teaser trailer out as well at poundingtheground.com. And yes, go right ahead, Therese. I'm sorry.
Excellent information. No, I'm sorry for interrupting. I have just found a copy of Jeffrey Pritchett's article on examiner.com. Jeffrey is the Mariana Paranormal Examiner, and I love the title, Tuning My Frequency, My First Psychic Reading Ever with the Lovely Anya Briggs. And also, Anya, I note here, you are one of the 15 original founding psychics in the Best American Psychics Organization. Tell me about that. That's a peer review group, so to speak, of psychics.
It was. It was a tremendous honor to be a part of that. That was invitation only in its inception, I believe, several years ago with the lovely Shea Parker. I had to make a decision at a certain turning point to finally leave because I wanted to devote myself 100% psychic practice. And then there were all of these requests to be in media projects and so forth that it was a fantastic stepping stone to where I am now, and you know, it's always an honor to be asked of a jury of peers, as it were, to belong to something, and I really was tested. I really was tested to get into Find Me. I really was sort of quizzed on my abilities, as it were, or asked to give a bit of a demonstration, and I just like to think of myself as someone who the proof is in the pudding. I'm not here to prove anything, and I'm not here to be the single-handed spokesperson for all psychics across the world. I am in a field that tends to be a bit beleaguered. people tend to cast a very jaundiced eye on the field that I am in, and I just try to do my work and keep my nose to the ground and just do the work, and the work speaks for itself. And if you want to check out my own webpage, currently at hack.com, but I am going to have a live website, and I know I'm saying a lot of websites here, but my website, my official website, goes live around the 10th of April, maybe the 9th of April. I'm not too clear on the live date, but that's just going to be anyabriggs.com. But I believe you have a link to my current webpage that's listed.
Yes.
You can read all about who I am, what I do, and how I can assist you. I'm absolutely open to receiving appointments from people still. And I love what I do. I love my clients. And you can absolutely hire me for work, and I will be very happy to assist you if I may. And I want to also add that I am not for everyone, but if I am the perfect fit, you will know, and you will benefit from my work. You absolutely will, whether it be regarding relationships, life paths, career moves, investments, potentially. Look, I've worked with businesses on finding investors. I do character assessments. I am extremely helpful to the business person, both large and extremely helpful to people in crisis or in transition or with turning points or people who have to make big decisions or not even so much that, if they have even malaise, if they just are kind of lost and they sort of feel like they have the sinking feeling that they've chosen the wrong profession. I'm really good at doing turnaround on that and helping people find their passion again. I like to call myself a set of jumper cables for your spirit. And you are the one doing about 90% of the work, but that 10% that you need when you need it, I come in very handy for that. I'm really good at, as the title of Jeffrey Pritchett's article says, I'm really good at tuning into people's frequencies and adjusting them. I tweak them. I guess you could say I do spiritual auto repair work a little bit, and I'm happy to get people back on their path, back on the road.
That's excellent, Anya. And, you know, I believe that you consider one of your goals to help others perceive possible potentials as far as career paths. So in this very difficult economy, also your clientele covers the full spectrum of society. It includes the elite in media and other social circles, as well as that very important group, the experiencers.
Oh, yes. In fact, I would say the overwhelming majority of my clients find me, and they will invariably include, I would say about 90% of the time, and I don't believe that's an exaggeration, mm-hmm. somewhere in their contact with me, somewhere in the email usually, they will say, I don't know why, but I was drawn to you. Can you help me specifically with my concerns? And 9 times out of 10, these people have, in fact, been experiencers or are having psychic activity around them, or they are, for lack of a better term, awakening. They suddenly find that their lives are sort of have been built on a house of cards usually, and those people that come to me tend to do really good 180 degrees in their lives, and they're ready for it, and those clients I adore because they're ready to change. You don't have to drag them kicking and screaming. Personally, I don't hire clients. I don't let the clients hire me, who are like that, who are that irascible usually. Usually I don't have that many tough nuts to crack. Usually the clients who come to me are absolutely clear in their decision to change. And invariably there is some kind of hyper-spiritual or supernatural, or for lack of a better term, paranormal, if you will, attachment to this. And invariably, something will come up that is no question in my mind spiritual or of a spiritual nature. And also what's really curious, and I don't have any kind of A plus B equals C logic to what I do. It's very nonlinear. But at the same time, it's absolutely tailor-made to the client. It is absolutely geared towards their needs. And in fact, okay, my guide, some people get uncomfortable with that, but it really is, I am being guided, I am being spiritually, whatever you want to call it, divinely, supernaturally guided. I work in the true light. I am not a devil, worship Satan. I'm the exact opposite of that. I believe that sunlight is the best disinfectant, and I'm all about transparency and being honest, and integrity is something I hold very dear. And I expect it of my clients as well. I expect them to hold themselves to their own promises as well. And usually when people are ready to change, they do. They have a high volume of integrity that if they didn't feel like they had it before, it was partially because that their passion was missing. And suddenly they are the most integral to themselves that they can be, and they suddenly hold themselves much more accountable than they perhaps maybe have in their entire life. Or it's a shift of consciousness, and past lives tend to play a role in that as well. And what I'm really good at as well is for people who have never done this sort of thing, because God knows, before I had my awakening experience in 2008, I certainly had never consulted with a psychic before. I was curious about it, and I had wanted to, but I was certainly not doing what I'm doing prior to 2008 when I had an extraordinary, you could say divine, you could say paranormal experience. I had a UFO sighting, and then suddenly I couldn't stop doing readings to save my life. And there was a communication. There was a telepathic communication. And I had to walk out of my day job because I could not stop doing readings for my boss and people that were calling in the office and the door guy and people down the street, and so I suddenly thought, well, maybe I should go pro, maybe I should try this out. It seems that I have this ability now that might be able to help some people. But my point is that I feel like I'm really good at putting people at ease who have never done this sort of thing before. So if I talk about frequency or energy or past life interference or any of these things, I can speak to you in layman's terms about that. It really is just about, the bottom line is it's really just about energy placement and where we choose our focus and what we choose to focus on and why. And what I do is I sort of help take the box of stuff that you either don't want to deal with and or just don't, you feel overwhelmed and you don't know how to deal with it or make sense of it. And what I do is I work very, very closely with the client in a language they can understand that's to them and only them. It's, as I said, it's very tailored to their needs. And we figure it out. We take the wrinkles out of the clothing, so to speak, and we figure out where something got lost, and we figure out where something was trapped, and we pick it up and we examine it in a very safe, sane environment where they can, it's absolutely imperative that the client feel safe in a session. And also, again, I don't let clients who don't feel like they could handle this. Thankfully, I have a sixth sense to tell when someone is not ready for this emotionally. And I do have a series of questions that I ask on my webpage of my potential clients. To answer honestly, no one's looking, it's just between you and the computer, to answer honestly 6 very easy yes or no questions. And if the answer is yes, then absolutely hire me. But if you say no to any of those questions on the webpage, please do not hire me because you are not going to be ready for it. And if you are ready for it and the answer is yes, then it will probably be one of the more beneficial things you've probably ever done. Chances are, I'm willing to stake a claim on that.
Very interesting information. It sounds to me, Anya, as though you follow a very professional protocol in choosing and assisting your clients, and also it's important that people try to be very proactive in what is rather a challenging economic and social situation now. We've got some great new dynamic, such as in the Occupy Now movement. And you've done some excellent work there as a journalist for the Graylian on the Occupy Now movement, pardon me. And you were mentioning as well in a phone conversation that you think that perhaps there are new developments as far as even media personnel and consultants realizing the sea change now with the different economic and social environments and also the political scenarios. And also, if a second part of that question is, how interesting that in 2008 you had a very unique ET experience. Your sighting actually became telepathic, and you had quite an intense autumn there in 2008. just continue on with that. I hope my question wasn't rambling.
It wasn't at all. It's really hard to talk about my story and have a period at the end of the sentence because there are so many linking connectors to what has happened to me. And I think I had mentioned to you in our conversation as well that I like to refer to them as I have many varying experiences that fall into all kinds of concentric circles that would apply to many different people's experiences. And incredibly enough, people tend more than not to believe me because I have nothing to prove. I think, quite frankly, the sheer volume of experiences I've had that interlace with the synchronicities, with the UFO experiences, with, yes, military abductions and the like, and then just my nuts and bolts psychic abilities and the fact that I talk to dead people as a medium and the fact that I work on cold case crimes and so forth.
Yes.
There is an interlacing common denominator to all of that, but at the same time, the people having all of those experiences tend to be very polarized in the individual communities of all of these different subjects. Most law enforcement will not publicly admit that they consult with psychics. However, I know behind the scenes very much so that they consult with psychics all the time. They just don't talk about it, and it's not necessarily official policy, but when they have thrown their hands up and there's absolutely nothing they can do, and believe me, there are many qualified law enforcement who can do the job quite well, but sometimes they do need our help. So they would not be caught dead necessarily at a UFO conference, say, or a psychic New Age Expo, or most of these people I talk to are even skeptical about the military-industrial complex kidnapping thousands of innocent civilians from their homes and taking them to underground facilities and interrogating them and forcing to do remote viewing experiments or God knows what. However, I sort of hopscotch or leap pad from subject to subject to subject, and incredibly enough, most people, I think, get it. But again, the people that don't hang out with the people who are interested with the targeted individual community, for instance, because I also spoke at the committee for the Presidential Committee for Bioethics last May. Incredibly, many people in the targeted individual community do not want to have anything to do with military abductees. They think it's all fake and made up. So you have the polarizations, again, that are, I think, loosening. And I think this does have to do with the media personalities who I know or I'm acquaintances with or I'm friends of friends with, who all, the ones I've heard of through the grapevine or met directly and have just said things directly to my face about it, I think in particular the awakening, believe it or not, through the alternative media certainly, has a spiritual component. It's not just economic justice. It's not just we deserve jobs, as in the Occupy movement.
Yes.
It also has an overarching theme of something to do with the Illuminati, with something to do with the power structure, with something to do with, yes, I'm going to go there, aliens, and free energy. And the energy supply on the planet, and the disparity between the haves and the have-nots. And it's all coalescing in this perfect storm of God knows what. I certainly don't know, believe it or not, but I have general ideas of things in the next 6 or 9 months, but it's interesting to note that I think several people have mentioned this. I think Andrew Bajago of the Pegasus Project has perhaps mentioned how they've looked past 2012 and there was nothing with the looking glass technology or the chronovisor technology that he was using, I believe. And then I believe there were other psychics who have said beyond 2012 it's a little difficult to see what's going to happen. And I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not really a psychic who makes predictions on television or radio. I don't like the word prediction. I am someone who believes, I've been told, this is how I've been, you know, coached and taught by my guides, that the science as we understand it is wrong, it's all backwards, that there are many timelines, and that thoughts create reality. So in a sense, we are beings, we are quantum light beings in a light universe, and if thoughts create reality, then we are infinite progenitors of universes and infinite progenitors of ideas and explorers of that, should we choose to do that. So when I say something's going to happen in a reading, or if I say something's going to happen in my blog post, or something comes to pass that I've mentioned several years before, it's because I was looking at the most likely timeline. And I wish more people who were more short-term thinking about psychic ability and would stop asking me why don't I play the lotto every day, which is the psychic question number one. If I were you, I would play the lotto every day. I would win the, you know who won the Super Bowl. Well, I know who wins the Super Bowl. It's usually, it's funny about sports scores and things like that. I only usually know about, like, maybe 6 hours before, if that, or 3 hours before, usually. It's never long enough amount of time for me to actually bet on it, which is funny. I think there's a cosmic rule that does not allow you to use your abilities for that kind, just kind of petty. You know, it's not really the focus. So if you're talking about predictions, the word predictions, you're talking about likelihood of that timeline to coalesce with your timeline. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. And, you know, I just wanted to preface a prior comment of yours as far as your testimony on May 18th, 2011 in New York City before the Presidential Commission for the Study of Bioethical Issues. Very moving, very compelling testimony. And interestingly as well, Anya, there were several people that day who also had testimony along that same along the same subject matters or related subject matters. Very intriguing. Now on time, you were suggesting the concept of time port rather than stargates. Boy, I thought that was intriguing.
Well, you know, you can thank my guides for that. They have penned most of the terminology that I speak that comes out of me. I thought the term time portal was quite beautiful, actually, and quite an apt description. As I understand it, as it's described to me, it's not entirely a wormhole, but it's the closest approximation to one. I do have the ability to have whole ships come through these portals, if you will, but there are ways you can make smaller ones as well so that a human form or a humanoid form can step through as well. And again, this is not in a 3D reality we're talking about. This is an interdimensional or an it's being described to me as an interstitiary sort of holding place, a book, if you will, between time, between timelines. A bridge, if you will, which is interesting because my last name in Welsh means bridge, which I think is very telling of my calling. But at any rate, I essentially create bridges between time. And when I first woke up, one of the first things that started happening to me was I would be compelled to walk to my, at that time it was my bathroom window. I would put a stool by the a bench or, you know, one of those foldable ladders, a small just sort of step ladder that I had, and I would unfold it and put it next to the bathroom sink. And then I would feel a magnetic pull through my pineal gland, through my forehead, where the site of the third eye is, the second sight. And it would literally feel like a magnet was being pulled on my head, and I would get very drowsy, and my head would just automatically fall gently. It wasn't harsh, but my head would fall on the bathroom sink edge, and my eyelids would start flickering rapidly, and I would, for lack of a better term, I would receive bugs. And it felt very mechanical, and I'm not going to lie to you, I'm quite sure there's some kind of technology inside of me that has been added since 2008 or perhaps before, and it could be secret government, it could be ET, it could be reverse engineered tech, could be something completely independent from that, but I know it's not me necessarily doing this by myself. This is a co-collaborative thing where I kind of instinctively just knew what was happening to me was not bad. It felt benevolent. I don't know how else to say that. Of course, there's always the possibility I could be being swindled. However, these interactions were never so unpleasant or shocking to the point that I was scared. I never felt fear. In fact, it was kind of exciting at first. It was completely new to me. I had no knowledge of what was happening. I didn't even know that what I was doing at the time was creating these bridges between timelines. But I will never forget the first time portal because it was, I think, one of the more dramatic ones. I don't know how to describe this. It was the night sky, and then a hole opened up in the night sky that was another night sky. And I would say it was maybe, I was looking at it from about a quarter mile away in the sky, so that would maybe be about 50 feet in diameter. It was not that, it was pretty sizable, so I would say maybe 100 feet in diameter, maybe across. And it was clearly another night sky punctured, as if you had taken a hole punch, a gigantic hole punch, and punched a hole in the sky. It was a different quality of light, different stars. It wasn't the same night sky. It was different light, different texture. But I was told that it was 300 years in the future. that I was looking at. Opened up a hole in the sky. They had allowed through whatever technology that had been placed inside of my head, right behind my pineal gland, as I understand it. And I also supposedly have an implant behind my ocular nerve, which allows me to view ET and reverse engineered holographic technology. So sometimes it's easier to, it's sort of like sending an email rather than a physical visitation. And this is interesting because I seem to be a version 2.0 of being an experiencer or being a contactee, because most of my contact experiences are either holographic messages that are left for me to decipher. They are deep-bound images that usually appear in front of my eyes like a screen, and they tend to have the most profound effect on me, for the better. It's a kind of wisdom or a kind of knowledge. Just with one image that's shown to me, I suddenly understand volumes of information that I can't really articulate unless it's called upon me in a certain situation, and then I can talk about it. But the most profound, overwhelming sensation of knowledge, of really sacred spiritual knowledge or scientific information that is not mainstream science, or if it's highly advanced information, it's suddenly downloaded into me and then occasionally extracted, and for whatever reason, and I still don't know what those reasons are, but I would posit the notion to not throw the baby out with the bathwater when I use the term holographic, because instantly people tend to become cynical about that and say, well, that's just secret government messing with you. Well, if it's messing with me, it's messing with me in the most profound way. And it's led me down, quote-unquote, this primrose path to success and happiness and joyful friendships with people I really love. I mean, obviously there's some hanger-oners there who want to, you know, try and steal your power. There's icky people along the way occasionally. They see something bright and shiny and they want to own it. And I've had to end a few friendships of people who I thought were my friends who really weren't. They just wanted to subsume me and sort of own me and take what I had and somehow steal that somehow. It's so silly because you can't steal. It's infinite generosity. It's the universe. It's the energy from the universe. So I somehow was just, something happened to me where I was allowed to tap into certain elements of that without completely losing my mind, going insane, winding up in an institution, because I can guarantee to you some of the information that I've been given would probably, if it had been doled out to me all at once, I probably would have lost my mind just by the sheer volume of it. Sometimes I just wonder why am I still alive, because some of the information is proprietary, and sometimes I have talked about it unwittingly in some of my previous interviews, and I have gotten psychic attacks for it, and in some of my videos that I have on YouTube, and you can check out my YouTube channel actually on my Anya is a Channel blog. There's a link to that as well if you want to see some of the older videos I made. Just as an aside, I have not made channeling videos in a while. What had happened is I had been a conscious channel, and I was receiving all kinds of information along with these downloads. And in fact, I have, since this started in 2008, I've been told by whomever is collaborating with me on my psychic work, be it animal, vegetable, or mineral, I have no idea really sometimes, but they have told me that I have been downloaded since August 15, 2008 with, and perhaps before that, because I was having some prior experiences as well, but it just ratcheted up after August 15, 2008. I've been told I've been downloaded with over 6.2 trillion terabytes of information. And I didn't even know what a terabyte was when I was told that. I'm not a tech geek. I don't understand. I could barely pronounce the word byte when I saw it. I kept saying bit for a long time. But apparently one terabyte is 1,000 megabytes of information. So 6.2, it might be 7.2 trillion. I don't know the exact number yet, but I think it was 6.2 trillion. Terabytes that have been downloaded. So that's a lot of information. And I have had interactions with I guess I can call them astral agents, who have sort of popped through the walls and start asking me advanced physics questions and advanced mathematical questions, and some kind of button is pushed inside of my head or something, and I can suddenly converse with them about advanced mathematical equations. And believe me, you, I really suck at math. Pardon the vernacular, but I can put two together. So that's not me. That's got to be something that's been implanted inside of me that somehow is able to be activated. But honest to God, I couldn't tell you how that works other than through some kind of advanced technology.
Well, you know, Anya, there is an advanced technology component there of your background. And I just want to note here, too, that you certainly are a very multi-talented person. I noticed, for example, not only be a journalist for the Occupy Wall Street movement, but you also write documentaries for artists. When you were on the television program with Teho Vojovic, a media personality from the U.S. and before that from Montenegro, you described his work as, quote, a collision of time with reminiscences of the future, end quote. And, you know, I think that this was interesting, too. This is off on a tangent, but boy, was it interesting. While you were at Fine Arts, you were a Fine Arts major. Was it Ohio University, Ohio State, or Ohio University?
Ohio University. Shout out to Athens, Ohio. Love it. That's my hometown as well.
That's a great academic institution. Many fine, brilliant minds there at Ohio University. Well, while you were a fine arts student, you were employed by the AV engineering department. And even though now you were one of the technology librarians, I believe, they also wanted
I was.
They wanted you to participate as well in a flight simulator development program. Boy, that's interesting.
Oh, well, this is really interesting because I was the token art student in a department filled with brainiacs, and they thought me a little unusual, and they thought me a bit of an oddball in a very charming, adorable way. They were all very kind and nice. And one of the thing about this flight simulator experiment they wanted me to be a part of is that they wanted me to land a plane using only the power of my mind. That was the unusual aspect to this flight simulator experiment that they were doing. And initially, I could not stop laughing when I was approached about it because I just thought, you want me, of all people, to land a plane, let alone with my mind? Not going to happen. But for some reason, they were keenly interested in the fact that I was very right-brained, and everyone in the department was very left-brain, logic-oriented, and I am considered 100% right-brain, which means physiologically, if your biological mother is left-handed, which my mother is, you are left-handed, then you are technically 100% right-brained. So the chances of me being an electrical engineer were probably slim to none. That was sort of my genetic destiny, if I was going to be a left-hander. And that I was in the arts, and that I was a creative thinker, and that I was more big picture than A plus B equals C, which is what the right brain dictates. It deals with big picture issues. It doesn't deal with fine detail in mathematics, that sort of thing. So they wanted to try out someone with a radically different brain type, and I was it. I met the criteria. And so the day came, and I sat in a chair, and they hooked me up to a bunch of electrodes, and I sat in front of at that time, it was the most advanced computer technology I'd seen in my life. It was beautiful by early 90s standards, and I just sat there for an hour trying to take it seriously, but I have to be honest with you, I was giggling through much of it. And then the end of the hour came, and the engineer came in, and he said, thank you very much, and off I went. But I would be surprised to see if this did not, you know, if my name hadn't already been on some kind of list as a person of interest in terms of what I bring to the table. By that point, I'm pretty sure that I was placed on some kind of interested list for future exotic propulsion system technology experimentation, because flash forward to 2006. I was randomly looking through the local paper. I think it was just a free paper, a Metro. It's published all over the world, I think it was. Maybe it was the New York Times, I'm not sure. And I go to page 6, and my eye goes to the bottom of the page. It's just completely drawn to the bottom of the page, and lo and behold, it turns out there's a defense contractor that I think might have been working with, well, they were definitely working with avionics engineering departments to develop this very flight simulator, or rather flight landing technology, and that it was patented, and this was in 2006. So it's not so out there. I mean, it's not like what I'm saying is so crazy as to be believable. People just put blinders on, and by and large, people will just look at me with this quizzical look when I mention these types of things, and they either choose to not believe me or they just don't want to know. It's a kind of cognitive dissonance that I find particularly pernicious, because it's saying the person just doesn't want to know, because that just opens up a whole can of worms and it screws up their whole routine and their life. So, you know, I prefer to go where I'm wanted when I start talking about this kind of stuff, and I feel very welcome here. Thank you very much. But I just, right. I think the old, it's not to sit here and talk about me for an hour and 45 minutes. It's really more because I'm hoping, perhaps, that by me speaking about this sort of thing, A, it can become more normalized, it can become more mainstreamed. Hopefully there might be some bleed through in that paradigm by someone like me who really did not seek this kind of thing out. I didn't seek channeling out, I didn't seek being a psychic medium, I didn't seek being a MyLab. God knows I didn't want to be a MyLab, and anyone who wants to be that is out of their mind, they've got to be insane. It all happened to me. So when someone says, who is in the UFO community, oh, have you read this book? Oh, have you read that book? No, I hardly haven't. I'm simply having these experiences, and then I will be looking at YouTube, or someone will send me a video, or I'll be on Facebook, and I will find the information that, incredibly enough, will corroborate it. So part of the reason I do these shows is because if it's happening to me, as exotic and foreign, perhaps, as some of these experiences sound, and as exotic and foreign as some of this technology that I'm talking about sounds, you can bet the horse on it that it's happening to someone else somewhere else on the planet. And hopefully, it is my goal in speaking in these types of interviews about this sort of stuff, and I have been pretty much transparent about everything. There's a few things I will not talk about yet that I'm not ready to. Some of it's, quite frankly, kind of embarrassing because it's very intimate. But at some point, if I can handle it gracefully, I may even talk about that. But I've basically been telling people through my blog and through my interviews about 97% of what's happened to me. I don't believe in hiding anymore, and I don't believe in secrecy, and I don't believe in national security state secrets and that sort of thing, in the sense of, this is being done to thousands of U.S. citizens, with most likely with their tax dollars at work, and that's wrong. And I don't believe that should be kept secret. I don't believe that is in the interest of the national security state to make its citizens guinea pigs and test subjects and non-consensual medical subjects. I'm going to speak out about that. And if anyone wants to join me who it's really happening to them, be my guest. Speak up, you know? If you are in Project Stargate and you want to start talking about it, be my guest. Start talking about it. I guarantee you, you will find the very least a niche market where you'll have an ear to bend, because God knows I've been getting enough people coming to me in the Black Project who are either corroborating what I'm saying, can point to me to resources where this technology would have been devised, think tanks where this sort of thing would have been happening. It exists. It exists. And I really loathe cognitive dissonance. That's the number one thing I would say. I don't really hate anything or anyone to the point where I just think it's anathema, because for everything there is a reason, and everything serves an educational purpose, but there's no more time for cognitive dissonance. It's already 2012. And we don't have flying cars yet, So if you want to make the world what you want it to be, you're going to have to take the blinders off. And that's the clarion call that I was given, and I chose that path. And I hope others will join me in that. And I hope others will be more vocal about it and speak out about it. Because God knows I put my head on the chopping block enough times with this stuff. So it gets kind of lonely up here in this little area that I have where I'm just talking and talking and talking about it. And I get bored with my own voice, and I would like to hear other people's perspectives on that.
Well, you're a very strong advocate for this field. Two questions here before I forget. Anya, I know that you were a panel guest on Gia Scott's, one of Georgia or Gia Scott's Dawn of Shades programs. I believe you were a soul guest in the month of November 2011, then on a panel in December. I may have those 2 months confused in December. Well, in two consequential months, one you were a solo guest, the other on a panel. The panel was focused on My Labs. Now, Melinda Leslie, one of the panel members, was noting the importance of a psi component to the My Labs, that experiencers who have obtained access and in some cases possibly may even partially driven or influenced the alien craft are considered very interesting study subjects. And also, I wanted to note here as well that Georgia did mention in several blogs, but on this one particular blog, she did mention that after a program with you, she noted the following evening into the night, the early morning, some very strong paranormal anomalous events around her residence. And again, one has to say that this field is noted for high strangeness and anomalous experiences that unfortunately occur to the experiencers and also sometimes to those in their company. So to me, that's a rather strong testimony. And Anya, are you still with us?
Hello?
Hi, Anya, are you still on the line with us?
Yes, I'm sorry. That was a technical error from my end. I apologize.
No, quite all right. Key questions on the My Labs, if I'm correct here, my opinion is that you've noted you have unfortunately been the victim of some My Labs. Do you believe that perhaps you have been exposed to training as far as alien craft, and that might make you a subject of interest of some of the investigating parties? Also, have you ever been in a My Lab where ETs attempted to come to the rescue?
Oh, wow. Well, yes and yes is the answer to both of those questions. I think the first question is pretty a common denominator for a lot of My Labs, a lot of experiencers, a lot of contactees. The one common denominator I've heard before is an interest in exotic propulsion systems technology. Often military abductions have a strong extraterrestrial component, and this is where it gets kind of sticky because they do drug you, they do hypnotize you, they do many things to you to make you think something is happening, they give you screen memories. So bear with me here because I don't know 100% what's happened to me, but I have a fair idea and a rough estimate, and I have had corroboration, and certainly God knows I've had the marks on my body and the strange experiences and so forth. I mean, clearly something is happening to me of an unusual nature that doesn't involve psychosis or mental illness. Now, yes, they're very interested in propulsion systems, absolutely. And yes, I do know how to fly a UFO, for lack of a better term. Could I do it right now? Could I? No, I don't think so. But there's something that gets activated where, again, I don't think it's an accident that I've been with 6.2 or whatever it is, trillion terabytes of information. You don't get that without some kind of very specific pointed reason. Now, as for ETs rescuing me, now, granted, I'm still recovering memories. It's very painful at times. It's very stressful at times. It can be disruptive to one's life. Something has happened recently, however, though, in that regard, in my attempts to separate the wheat from the chaff, whereupon it is suddenly not traumatic at all, and I'm recovering some very graphic, disgusting, violent things that are what I would consider morally and ethically repugnant, but have, if memory serves correct, have happened to me. Or if not, they are programmed memories that have been implanted in me for some specific reason. Either way, I don't think the issue should be whether or not it's a legitimate memory. I think the issue should be, why am I having them? Because I'm not making this up. I'm not doing this for my own health. There's obviously a reason why I am having them. Pro or con, it doesn't matter. There is a reason why these things are happening, very deliberate reasons. I don't pretend to know what they are, but that's why I continue to examine the mystery that is this continuing ongoing experience. Now, bearing that in mind, I don't think I've talked about this on the air, so you're good to get that little nugget, Therese, because this is kind of a big deal for me in it.
Thank you, and thank you, too, for that propulsion system term. I should have used that. Thank you for clarifying.
Well, that's fine, but this I have at least one recovered memory of being on a metal table in a medical type of facility with IVs all around and medical equipment and the types of the things that they rub together when people have gone up and they place them on your chest and they say clear,
yes,
those kinds
mm-hmm.
of things. All kinds of medical equipment all around, as well as scientific equipment that I couldn't even begin to tell you what it is. And I'm lying on a table. I'm in a hospital gown in this place. I can't tell you. For some reason, I want to say White Sands,
and
Mexico.
That's, boy, this sounds very, very intriguing. I'm receiving a message from Joe Montalvo. I'm at another computer, so I can't see the script too well, the way the computer here is positioned on the desk. Could we get right back to this in about 5 minutes' time? Joe is
absolutely.
Saying... Absolutely. White Sands, New Mexico incident. I definitely want to hear about this. We'll be right back, everyone. And thanks so much. What a fascinating discussion this is, Anya. Everyone, back in five.
Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, I'm psychic medium Chris George.
And I'm Stephanie Minetti. Psychic medium, are you sure about that, Chris? It's more like psychic extra large.
Yeah, real funny, Benetti, but then again, being my girlfriend, you would know. Together, we are Second Sight NYC, a parapsychic radio show based out of New York City.
Join us each week as we journey into the unknown. Let's cross the threshold of reality together.
We take a fun and no-nonsense approach to our show, and we love to interact with our audience. Each week, you can expect a great guest, interesting topics, and strong opinions by myself and Stephanie,
as well as rapid readings, psychic dream interpretations, and the gemstone of the week. Just a question that you don't want an answer to.
Give us 2 hours of your time to inform, enlighten, and entertain you. Let the journey begin.
Join us.
Light up your night with The Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi,
Welcome back to A Global Focus with guest Anya Briggs, psychic medium and experiencer, journalist, media and personal psychic consultant. Anya's media credits include ongoing appearances in the current 2012 third season of Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura on True TV. This is the second segment of A Global Focus. Now, at this point in the weekly show, I briefly remind our listeners of the other programs of the network. Of course, I've mentioned at the beginning of the show, Church of Mavis Saturday nights, and also I want to remind our listeners of other excellent programs, including UFO Undercover, always on an informative program with host Joe Montaldo, Wednesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, and the program on Thursday evenings, Second Sight New York City, with dynamic hosts Chris George and Stephanie Benetti. And, of course, on Friday evenings, just before this program, the 7 to 9 p.m. Show Through the Keyhole with field researcher and speaker Karen Dolan, not to be missed. Now, Anya, let's return to this fascinating discussion. Please continue.
Thank you, Treece. Well, I was just getting to the second answer to your second question, which was, have extraterrestrials tried to interfere or rescue me, for lack of a better term? Yeah, they have. They literally have. If this memory I have is not a screen memory of something else, could have been a human being who rescued me, I don't know, but the memory I have, it must have been one of the times I was taken as a MyLab, because these were very physical surroundings, very medical, very clinical, very scientific. I'm lying on a metal table. I can feel the cold steel on my back of the metal, and I must be drugged up or something because I can't move. And I'm looking up at the lights on the ceiling, just plain old fluorescent lights. And I don't know what's going on. I'm just very blank. I don't have any emotions. I don't know what's going on, but I'm just very calm and sort of out of it. And there's at least two people in white coats, and I'm assuming they're doctors, because they're about to administer the same type of medicine that they give to death row inmates who are going to be executed. It's the three-stage process of execution, with the first drug being one color. I think it's the red, yellow, blue, or something, colors that they administer, and the person dies on the table, rather than a lethal injection. They're getting ready to give me lethal injections and to disappear me, make me go away. And there are two, it's sort of like emergency room doors, fly open, and this brilliant yellow-white light fills the room. And I don't know how many of these beings are, but they're made out of light. I can't really see what they look like. And they come into this facility, and they say, "This child shall not die." And I feel myself lifted off the table, and they sort of enfold me in their light. And we go through the door, and that's the memory. I don't know what that is. Could be a hallucination. I have no idea. Could be post-hypnotic suggestion of something that was a screen. I have no idea. But it was so profound when I recovered this memory, and I would say that was maybe about a year and a half ago, I cried because it really resonated with me for some reason. I had no context for it. I didn't know what it was, and I was just about to break that for some reason, I think this is the White Sands, New Mexico base. And that I have been to Dulce before, and in fact, the crew did not know that I was a MyLab. That had not been something that was discussed. I talked more about being a targeted individual, because they were planning on making a targeted individual episode, which is why the producers had gotten in touch with me in the first place.
And I think I interrupt here and say that you are now the resident psychic advisor for the television series Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura in the show Season 3 this year, 2012. So you're mentioning that program.
That's correct. I'm sorry. Thank you, Treece, for mentioning the name of the program. I'm still trying to figure out the media. I'm not really trained very well in the media, so I hope you'll bear with me. So, yeah. for the show. Initially, I was slated to be on a targeted individual episode that they unfortunately did not get to shoot for season three. However, the show is not showing any signs of losing popularity. People are kind of voracious for the episodes when they come out. It's wildly popular. So knock on wood that we have a season four, and perhaps that will be one of the first episodes they shoot then. I have no idea. However, that was partially the initial reason why they wanted me to be on the show. And also because my friend Stone, a very dear friend, is one of the reporters on the show, and I kept calling him while they were shooting, and I would say things about the interview that he had either just done or was about to do, and he had not told me, and he would keep sending the texts that I was sending to the producers and saying, look, she just said this again about whoever guest they were interviewing or whatever scenario it was, and I was just giving him advice on, like, what to do. It was just sort of this compulsion would come over me to text message Sean, and it got to be this running joke after a while because I was texting him so much and it was so accurate what I was saying that finally the producer said, you have to put her on the show. Because I was just texting him all day long about the things that were happening. And then one of the producers, just a lovely guy, Mark Parsons, was talking to me a little bit as sort of like a preliminary conversation about what they wanted to do with me on the show, and he was very kind, and so he said, well, we'd like to put you in several episodes, and so I will most likely, assuming I make the cut, the final cut in editing, who knows, you never know what objects, but they really liked me, they really, really loved me, and everybody was so kind and so generous and just so, so, so sweet. Like, I really thought that they could have raked me over the coals and made a hit piece out of it, but we shall see. I think it'll be favorable, hopefully. I hope they'll be kind. They put me in an episode at Dulce Base that actually is one of the places that I'm pretty certain I was my labbed in. And again, I don't know why I'm saying White Sands, New Mexico Missile Base, but I think that was also an area. And, you know, that's not that far away from Dulce. I would say it's maybe, I don't have a map in front of me, but I think it's like maybe a couple hundred miles between the two of them. When we arrived for the shoot for Dulce Base, which was for the, they're actually doing an episode about reptilians, which I had said to Sean in, I think it was September, I said, you're going to be surprised with the show. Jesse is going to say something to the effect of, if you had told me that we were going to shoot an episode about reptilians 6 months ago, I would have told you you were crazy. And then lo and behold, we're standing there in New Mexico and he says that right to my face. He said that exact quote. So that was sort of the universe's way of telling me that I was in the right place and this was supposed to happen and everything was fine. So that also goes into the whole, I think people are opening their minds to what our reality is, their paradigms are changing, and that my role in that regard is to help ease them into the new consciousness that is being constructed as we speak. And I don't think it's an accident that I'm having these recovered memories when I am, and it just so happens to coincide with people just coming to me to be on shows. And I've been so lucky and grateful for people to finally start paying attention to what I'm saying, not just because it's me, and I'm so great and all. It's not about that. It's not about ego. It's just a final, it's one of the few ways I can think of that I would know that I could reach out to the populace in a much more efficient outlet like the media or like your wonderful show and hopefully find other people like myself. You know, and hopefully we can all heal together. Maybe we can solve a mystery. Maybe, who knows, you know. I certainly don't have all the answers, but what an amazing journey it's been. And certainly that memory that I'm talking about with the beings or whoever it was saying, this child shall not die. And let me tell you, those doctors that were about to administer the lethal injection to me, their jaws were on the floor. They were just stunned. And I've been told many times that I'm not supposed to die, that you know, maybe I hope that's not an opposite statement that I'm making, you know, and this is like a famous last words type of interview, God forbid, but I think there's a reason I'm alive, and I think there's a reason why I'm supposed to talk about this. I know I've definitely had attempts on my life. I've talked about this briefly, where I had a myocardial infarction. I had a heart attack on my living room couch, and the ETs healed me. And I don't know how they did it, but I believe there was either a heart attack gun that was used, and you can look up on YouTube, look up heart attack gun, it's real. They've used it many times on people to make them disappear very quickly if they're whistleblowers, and suddenly they die 12 hours before they're about to announce something in the media, very important. The CIA has been using a heart attack gun for 20 or 30 years now, and they can point it at your home. You don't even need to be directly in front of it, and you can get one. It was either something like that or perhaps, God forbid, you know, some other kind of exotic technology. I have no idea. But it was used against me to create a heart attack. And I survived. I felt very tired after this, obviously. It was a horrible experience. It was really painful. And they told me to go lie down, and I slept for 3 hours, which I don't think medically that's recommended if you just had a heart attack. They probably don't want you falling asleep. But I slept for 3 hours, I woke up, and I was fine. And they told me, they telepathically told me you've had a myocardial infarction. And there was a lot of warning several days beforehand, and I think I've mentioned this before in other interviews, I don't need to belabor the point, but I'm being protected. And I'm supposed to talk about this stuff because there are people behind the scenes, people who I would call the Space Command version, I don't want to attach it to one specific agency, but there's a lot of people, untold masses of people working in above top secret positions in space agencies internationally and otherwise, who I would call the modern day version of the French Resistance. And they are rebelling against their controllers. And they know that this planet has been in a slavery state of consciousness for eons, and they know our true history, and they are students of history, of our real history, not the hidden crap that passes for history in the average American public school system. And they know, well, no offense to teachers, I love teachers, but you're just not getting the full story. You really aren't. If you think that what you're taught in school is the official story. It isn't. And these men and women, these brave souls who I love dearly and I know are my bodyguards and I know they're protected, are also this one and the same people. And I've been talking about this for several years. This isn't bandwagon jumping. But I was particularly struck by the recent interview with David Wilcock, who had just received a death threat, and he was very upset. And I believe it was with Carrie Cassidy. I'm just here to corroborate, Carrie, if you're listening, and David, that I have been in touch with people who claim they're in Solar Warden and Space Command, and they've been telling me information for years about how the Illuminati is going down and how soon it will be over and there will be a new paradigm. And I know, I'm not saying I guess, I'm saying I know, that Mr. Anonymous, the gentleman that was speaking from an unknown place, and I know where he was coming from. I know where he was calling from. He was calling from another solar system. He was calling from another universe. He is working with the people that have my back. He's working directly with them. And I would very much, especially, like to speak with David Wilcock about this if he's interested in contacting me. He's more than welcome. And I do have some proprietary information that would be encoded strictly for him and only him if he wishes to communicate with me through any other means of, you know, that kind of conversation. He's my Facebook friend. He knows where to find me. I'm on the web. I'm very transparent and easy to find. But I do believe that there is a coalescing of forces here that's going on right now, between people like myself and others many others. I'm just a drop in the bucket. I'm really nothing special. I swear to God, it's not about ego gratification for me to go on these shows. I'd be honest with you, sometimes I myself personally feel absurd saying some of the things that have happened to me. I grew up in an academic household with professionals, highly educated people that are not prone to nonsense at all, very rational, sane, professional people. Not a one of them coaching me in any way, shape, or form on anything supernatural. That was highly discouraged. And I am not doing this for my health, obviously. So I do this for love, and I do this for moral courage, and I do this for the people who can't speak out, who the multitudes behind me who I know are protecting me. And I'm a civilian. There's a big difference there. I don't have any security of, so that gives me a lot of leeway. And I want people to think about that without, you know, dismissing me out of hand, as it would be so easy to do. I mean, I really am somebody who's like shooting fish in a barrel. It'd be really easy to dismiss what I'm saying. But I would ask you to research more intimately what has happened to me and realize that this is not just me that this is happening to. And I have had corroborated experiences with others as well. There are reasons. I'm sorry, if I may just finish this one thought. It's really important, Treece. If you think some of these Black Ops people stepping forward and going on things like the Bases interviews with Miles Johnston or Project Hamlet are liars and charlatans, even some of the untruths they may be telling, and I'm not saying this to put more flies in any ointment here, but sometimes people will deliberately tell lies as a means of survival. And that certain deliberate disinformation is not meant to deceive anyone. It is simply meant as a red herring so that people stay alive. And that when somebody comes up as a disinformation agent, and I'm not naming any names here, we really need to pay attention to what the message is, who the message is targeted for, and if there are any codes embedded in said message. No matter how outrageous, yes, racist, or provocative they might sound, I believe that some of these messages are meant to trigger memories in people who are super soldiers or my labs that are wake up at this time and do it in hopefully the speediest of manner. And I also would ask the public to learn about critical thinking, learn about the paranormal a little bit more, stop being such armchair passive, you know, coaches or listeners rather, and start learning about this stuff yourself. It doesn't matter. I can talk and talk and talk for days, and it won't matter. If it doesn't resonate with you, you're welcome to turn it off. But I would ask that people they work a little bit harder. They just engage their noggin just a little bit more than they normally would, because I can guarantee you some of these stories that people are telling are not just bold-faced lies, because I've experienced a lot of what some of these people are talking about. And usually, as I said before, 9 times out of 10, I have the first, and then I find out about it later. So it's been incredibly profound for me. A lot of these interviews that Miles Johnston has had in particular have resonated tremendously, and in many cases it has turned out there is corroborating evidence that is strongly leading to me being in programs with some of these people as well. And they will corroborate that as well if you ask them. Or they may not corroborate it publicly. They may not be willing to talk about it publicly, but I know some of them. And I know some of them already have. So there you go.
And very interesting information.
For you. I just had to say that. It was really important.
No, not at all. And I have two questions here from a favorite room visitor and researcher. I'm going to abbreviate her name here, Ray. And she's she was about to mention, are any of your family members present or former members of the military? And here I'd just like to note that you do have members of your in your family with very interesting things. A stepfather who is an academic, also your grandfather, paternal grandfather, you report is an international lawyer, was an international lawyer, he's passed now. He taught at The Hague, and a member of the UN Law Commission. Also, and his obituary was on the Times. times. Now, let me see here. Also, your grandfather on your maternal side was a physician in the Dayton, Ohio area.
Yeah.
And during World War II, he was called in as physician to help with a certain German personnel coming over. I believe one would call it the Operation Paperclip or similar program. I would assume it would be Paperclip. But I thought that was so interesting. I'll tell you why, Anya, because during the interview with James Clarkson, a wonderful American researcher and police investigator from the West Coast earlier this year, he mentioned his book about June Crane and also a transcript that he did with June Crane. June Crane was a administrative employee there at Wright-Patterson, and she mentions meeting Dr. Wernher von Braun as a prisoner at the time before his contract at the beginning of the Project Paperclip. And she mentions taking 3 hours of dictation on rocketry. She also mentioned that he was escorted by armed personnel.
I've spoken of this, I think, in an interview with Aaron Moriarty about...
Right, UFO show, July 2011.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. And just very briefly, in a nutshell, I don't think this was Wernher von Braun who my grandfather treated. However, he was an unrepentant Nazi scientist. And I have I have my ideas. I think I've narrowed down a handful of Nazi scientists who may have been at Wright-Patt during that time. But most definitely my grandfather was called out many years after World War II to the base. And that's another sort of thing that would probably be a red flag for people to think about why I might be low-hanging fruit or a person of interest. I know for a fact that as a civilian, in order for him to, I know he would have had to have a security clearance. He was a very, very private man, and I don't know too much about this at all because he certainly didn't talk about it when I was a child, and he died when I was 12 or 13 or so, there wasn't really much room for discussion about that. It just wasn't talked about. He just would get called. He would get a call from the Air Force to come out to Wright-Patt, and he would go, no questions asked. And this went on for a good 15 years or so after the war, many years after the war. But, yes, he absolutely treated a Nazi scientist, or rather, he did not treat a Nazi scientist. He refused to treat the Nazi scientist. He was being a jerk. But this absolutely happened. I just have no way. You know, if anyone can do research on that to corroborate that and get the name of the scientist he was dealing with, that would be great. You know where to find me as well. It's exciting that you were able to find that in your research. Thank you, Treat. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, very interesting information, intriguing. I noticed another question from Ray. Now, I want to also note here, Ray is asking, number one, if you've had any issues with dyslexia. And I have to note here, we've had some brilliant people in the organization who do have dyslexia. They're excellent researchers. They're also experiencers. So that's the first question. Have you had any issues with dyslexia? And secondly, have you been intuitive as far back? As far back as you can recall in your life? And I also noted in my research that as a child you were intuitive.
Well, it wasn't like it is now, I'll tell you that much. Just to quickly answer question number two first, if I may. I had on and off psychic experiences from a very, I guess, like in hindsight being 2020. You don't think about this when you're a child, it just is. But I would know things about people and I didn't know why. I would just know, I would be able to look at a person or meet a person for the first time and be able to know, quote unquote, which I guess could be called claircognizance now, a very primitive version of claircognizance for me as a child. But I would know if someone was a quote unquote good person or a quote unquote bad person, meaning would they consistently make choices that would have put me as a child in jeopardy? Or would they have not? And maybe this is just being an acute observer of body language or what, but I was a very highly sensitive child. My mother is a licensed psychologist. She told me at a very young age that I was considered highly sensitive, and I was. I took things to heart much harder than most kids, I think. And this was a pattern that established itself very early to the point where she felt a need to talk to me about that. I think in psychoanalytic terms, that might be a highfalutin way of saying psychic or intuitive. I don't know. However, really, and then I was in my, I didn't have any paranormal experiences until I was 19 or 20 and living in off-campus housing as a student at Ohio University in Athens. And then it was sort of like the caca hit the fan, and it was just like nonstop. But even then, during living in that haunted house, which I have talked about at length in other interviews, I don't need to bore people with the details again, but even then that was so sporadic. There would be times of dormancy until August 15, 2008, and I was told I would never be alone again. That's a direct quote, that I would never be lonely again, I would never be alone, that they would always be with me. And to some people that might seem creepy, but it was oddly comforting. It was sort of, it was very loving, very benevolent. It wasn't, there was no hint of threat behind that kind of statement. And that, you know, another reason why I'm the way I am now is because they said, we are going to return your memory, the birthright of your memories back to you. It is your birthright. Because you deserve it. Because all humans deserve it, but for some reason they decided to choose me to start remembering stuff that, honest to God, I don't think I was ever supposed to recover his memories. I don't think that was supposed to happen. And everything, pretty much everything they've told me that was going to happen to me over the last 3 years has happened. So they have a pretty good track record. In answer to your first question, or rather the listener's first question raised, question of, am I dyslexic? No, I am not dyslexic. However, I am horrific with numbers. I can barely add 2 plus 2. I am really bad with numbers, and I always have been. I had to have a tutor in high school, and even when I was in college for the mandatory, I think it was an algebra class I had to take, I had to have a tutor. I've always been lousy with numbers. And, let's see, what is the other deficiency that I have, potential learning disability? Oh, I have, I guess what you could say, increasingly over time, I think I've developed a kind of synesthesia, so I get a confusion of the senses sometimes. Words sometimes will have taste to them, they will have flavors, or people's energy fields will have flavors. I don't know how to describe that. But the closest word I could attribute that to would be a kind of synesthesia, so a confusion of the senses. But other than that, no, I do not. I've never been diagnosed with dyslexia. I love reading. I love words. I love to read.
You're very articulate, and actually, your recent response there dovetails right into this question by Goddess of Fire, our GOF. One of our favorite researchers in the room and member of ICAR. Now, GOF is wondering, you've been aware of changes in energy around you, and, you know, it sounds to me as though you are rather sensitive to energy, to seeing energy patterns or receiving them, feeling them, sensing them.
Oh, please. Thank you. Well, thank you, Goddess. To say that I am sensitive to energy is kind of like saying water is wet. Yes, I am a walking, living, breathing tuning fork. And that has only increased the more psychic readings I do, and it's sort of like stretching a muscle. The more exercise you get, you tend to be a little more fitter each time you exercise, right? So the muscles I've exercised psychically must be powerhouses by now, because I can feel energy fields off of inanimate objects now, whereas that wasn't that strong before. It's like a magnetic pull, I have to say. It has a magnetic frequency, which actually might give some kind of credence to electromagnetism and the energy that we have yet to tap into on the Earth's electromagnetic field, because I'm able to detect ley line energy. I am able to detect negative versus positive ionization of energy. I'm able to detect auras around people. However, I don't really see, quote-unquote, the colors of a person's aura, literally. Sometimes that happens, but very rarely, my mind's eye. And I will describe to the person often, if I'm in a reading with them, about the color of their aura and what that means. And that has been strictly guided by my guides. And it tends to, I would say, without fail almost, 100% of the time, that tends to be very accurate in terms of the energy, the bioenergetic frequency the person is giving off. tends to be a very accurate description of where they're at emotionally without them saying a word. And I'm very quick to add when I'm in a reading, if it is a Skype video session, I'm not doing this out of body language. I'm simply, most of my sessions, sometimes we don't even go on screen because some people don't want to be seen on screen. So if somebody wants to debunk that and say, oh, you're just looking at their body language, no, I'm not. They're sitting silently with the video screen turned off and I'm giving them the information. And that is also accurate as opposed to if I'm sitting in front of them in front of a video screen. So that trumps that theory that I'm just going off of cold reading and body language, because that's just impossible. A lot of my readings are by phone and with the video turned off. So be that as it may, yes, I have become increasingly sensitive to energy frequencies to the point where I also am sensitive to remote viewers, remote viewing me. And I have direct confrontations with them, and they go away, or they're going to get some lemon juice in their eye because I'm not having that. I'm not having a stranger come into my home to spy on me. I don't think most people would enjoy that unless it's a particular kink of theirs or picadillo. I don't know. But most people, I think, ride on in their own homes. So I have a particular virulency towards a lot of remote viewing and a lot of remote viewing programs. A lot of them are rooted in materialistic or espionage purposes. And it's a bastardization of what the whole point of remote viewing is, which is spiritual, which is a connection to God, which is a connection to the God energy, all that is. It's not how to get a quick buck and see if somebody is, you know, screwing you over at work. Well, I mean, that could be a spiritual issue, if somebody's screwing you over at work, but you have to be very, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, is my point. So in terms of that, yes, I am extremely sensitive to even people with disembodied auric fields and astral bodies coming to visit me, coming to have telepathic conversations with me as well. And very often that gets corroborated as well. The person may have been thinking about me or thinking about a conversation, and very often that their higher self or their astral body will project into my home and have that conversation that will later be corroborated. Well, I'm sorry, and I apologize. What was the second question, or was there one?
There's actually a third question. There is an additional question from GOF, or Goddess of Fire. She was referencing your, and my comment here would be that it is in the research that often experiencers can have troubling dreams or a definite a dream indicator of past experiences in the dream record or dream memories.
Yes, absolutely. One in particular that I have that was, I would consider it a recovered memory that came through in a dream. It certainly didn't feel like a dream, or it might have been a MyLab where it feels like a dream. This is the perniciousness and the insidiousness of MyLabs, because they will give you a concoction of drugs that will make it seem just like a dream, when in fact they know how to compress time, they know how to manipulate the body's energy fields to make them think that it's a year ago. They know how to make you think that you're sleeping when you're awake. So it's very confusing. And it seems like the odds are stacked against us, except for the fact that I know that there's a whole quote-unquote French resistance behind us, a phalanx of French resistance who are in position and ready to take place with what the next of the stage of human development is. And they are going to make damn sure that nobody interferes with that. And I hope the Illuminati is listening, because they are going, there's going to be a payday. There's going to be a payday very readily. The saber rattling that's going on in Iran right now, it's not going to suffice. And so if this keeps up, they will stop it. It's as simple as that. It's time to stop it. The assets of the elites have been frozen, the ones whose assets needed to be frozen. They're running like scared little babies, and they are terrified. This is to corroborate what I've been saying this for a couple of years now, but David Icke just recently did an interview with Alex Jones on his radio show at Infowars.com, I think it was, and he's talking about how terrified the Illuminati are, the key players. You know who you are. Some of you have met with me directly in very unusual circles. You know who you are. You're terrified. Give it up. There's plenty of room at the inn. We can all share the same table. It's so silly how you think you know what's going on. You're scared old men who have to steal young boys' souls in order to keep your life. That's not going to happen. That psychic primacy is no more. You are impotent in that regard. It is not fair. You have to give up the ghost. So we're all working on this. Some of us are more on the front line than others about it. Some of us, well, my guides are saying right now that I'm routinely put my head on the chopping block, but since I'm a civilian, I kind of get away with it. But there are people I know who are protecting many lives on a day-to-day basis in NORAD, in the CIA, in the FBI, in the military agencies. They are all ready. They are all at the ready, and they're ready to take over when the time comes. And I don't mean to make that sound ominous or threatening. What I mean is the time for just reparations is coming in our lifetimes within a couple of years. And it's going to manifest itself in many eye-opening, paradigm-challenging ways, but it will. This fiasco that we find ourselves in, and I feel like the energy grid is really strong right now for people to fall apart, lose themselves, get confused, lose track of their purpose, their mission, their goal, what have you. And it's time to get back on track. It's time to sort of dunk your head in the proverbial bucket of cold water and get on with it. It's time to get on with the show, which is probably why the recovered memories I'm having, and they are horrific, are not traumatizing to me, whereas 2 years ago I was just this fragile little eggshell about it every time one came up. So something's happening. Some people refer to it as the quickening. I don't know. But in terms of, I'm sorry, I'm getting away from myself. What was there was something attached to that question. I wanted to make sure I could answer their other questions.
About dreaming, but you were referencing that you do have
the dreaming. Yes. Back to that. I think I might have briefly mentioned this. I have a dream. And for some reason, I think I'm in White Sands Missile Range area, in New Mexico. I'm in a hangar, an outdoor hangar that's sort of hidden a little bit because it's sort of dug out under the ground, so it's sort of like this exposed hangar and sort of a sunken area, if you will, with hills all around, the desert hills all around, and two very Aryan-looking young men in tan trench coats, if you will. They look extremely Aryan, like poster boys for Nazi youth kind of look, and they're late teens, early 20s, are sitting across from me at a card table with a wooden tray. There are wooden objects on the tray, and they are telling me telepathically, they're ordering me, they're not being friendly, to move the objects on the tray with my mind. Now, this is also a very common recovered memory that my labs will have, where people are telling them to telepathically, or telekinetically rather, move objects with their mind. That's not uncommon. And I'm in a hospital gown and I'm freezing. It's cold outside, but I'm drugged up and I'm completely drugged up. Just so high. So groggy. I don't know what's going on. But nonetheless, I'm being ordered to move these objects with my mind. So there was a clarity and a lucidity to that particular dream. Could have been a computer program being run. I don't know, a holographic program of some kind, trying to see what I would react to. But I've heard of other people having recovered memories and dreams, and it doesn't happen to me as much as perhaps some of these others would have. I tend to have them consciously when I'm in the supermarket grabbing a bag of vegetables or something, and suddenly there's this vision that pops in front of my head, and it's a memory, and I'm in my body, me sort of clairvoyantly seeing somebody else's experience. It's me in my body having the experience. So I don't know what to make of it. It could all be a big hoax being perpetrated on me. I have no idea, but the consistency and with the corroborations and the volume of consistency of the corroborations with the number of people who keep claiming that they too are in these programs is eerie, it's chilling, and it needs to be taken seriously. Not all of these people are charlatans, I'm telling you. Some of them are. Some of them are doing it for kicks. But most of them that I have found are attached to my story are not making this up. They can't. They can't be. It's just, it would have to be a hoax that would cost millions, if not almost $1 trillion, I would think, for the kind of equipment and technology that I'm seeing in these images, or the kinds of, it'd have to be like a Hollywood movie budget for it to be the biggest prank of all time on me, for it to keep happening consistently since August 15, 2008, and actually before that, because I had a hyper paranormal experience on December 19, 2007, that sort of was the trigger point that started all of it off. So, do with that what you will. I mean,
yes, I remember that December date from a prior interview. Now, Anya, here's a very interesting question coming in from one of our favorite room visitors, EB, or Eternal Being. EB is wondering whether or not you have encountered mystery school concepts in your research or experiences. And my question is, do you believe that this type of knowledge, the mystery schools, might actually be utilized today by different groups studying or interacting with ETs or UFOs or via rogue operations?
That is a fascinating, really good question. Thank you. Oh, yeah, I've been indoctrinated to mystery school knowledge through my MyLabs. I mean, if you're to believe what James Caswell says, and I know a lot of people don't, but again, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater, given what I said earlier about some of these people coming forward with information. I'm supposedly, I've been indoctrinated in my labs for a number of horrific occult practices that I do not care to talk about publicly yet. But I've been introduced to secret school concepts, Enochian magic. Unfortunately, I've had direct run-ins with a lot of black magicians, shall we say. Yes, they really exist. And they walk amongst you, and there's many of them, and a lot of them are really psychotic and or possessed by demonic entities and or negative ETs. And they are basically vessels or shells, and I know a lot of people could say that about me, but these people have chosen consciously, or there was something in their arc field, they were insecure, what have you, maybe they had an underlying condition that caused them to be more vulnerable than others. I don't know what, but they did not seek out the true light. I don't mean the Luciferian light, Lucifer, the light bearer. I mean the true light, the light of God, the God all that is. This is the shadow aspect of it. I'm not punishing it. I'm not trying to vilify it, because again, Earth is a giant classroom and we're all here to learn. But come on now, if you are sacrificing babies and eating human flesh, and you're at the highest level of the military, and you're practicing the occult on a regular basis, and you have to do black witchcraft ceremonies prior to a missile launch in order to get your rocks off, in order to guarantee that any interdimensional beings who will give you what you want from military prowess, to make these things happen, you have to sacrifice a human child. Yeah, I know about that kind of stuff. I've been in those kinds of ceremonies. According to what I'm recovering is memories, and they're horrific. And I've been forced to participate in them. And no, that does not make, you know, innocent, because I was unconscious about it, and I have a lot of guilt about that, and I'm dealing with it now. But at the same time, again, I'm supposed to talk about this for a reason. We are supposed to understand and coalesce about secret school knowledge now at this time, and I'm really glad this listener asked that question, because I really wanted to say in closing that we need to study the real military history and the occult connection. And I want to absolutely promote a fantastic researcher who is very, in my opinion, does not nearly get the kind of attention that he deserves. Douglas Dietrich, genius, brilliant man. And he actually worked at the Presidio in San Francisco under Michael Aquino, who is a world-class scumbag, in my opinion, and very high-ranking official in the military, who is also a Satanist, unrepentant Satanist, who practiced these ceremonies and rituals at the Presidio. And you can learn all about that. There's a great interview with Douglas Dietrich on Conscious Media Network. I highly recommend whatever it is, $5 subscription a month or something, to listen to this interview. It is riveting. And in fact, he corroborates exact experiences I've had with soul trapping military occult practices. So thank you to the listener for asking about secret school knowledge, because it's absolutely about the unveiling of this knowledge now at this time. And what I bring to the table is simply an acknowledgement of that, more in detail perhaps. But yes, yes. And the ETs know about this, but unfortunately, fortunately for me, it has not been really the ETs who have been educating me about the darker practices. Unfortunately, my knowledge of the darker practices comes through my direct personal experiences with either recovered memories of being a part of these things, or confronting or talking to or befriending people who are in the same boat as me and corroborating a lot of the information that I have.
Well, I appreciate very much those details. I would hope that that would not be the case. But, Anya, you strike me as someone who is very sincere in her research. And I have to say, Jeffrey Pritchett and others say that as a psychic medium, you're very gifted. And also, I just have to note here, we're about to start a new program on the network. One of your favorites, Joe Montalto, owner of the network and head of ICAR, has an inaugural show tonight of his Changing America broadcast. The website for this is www.changingamerica.us. We'll definitely be listening. And Anya, thanks so much for being a guest to our program this evening. Now, your website is anyasachannel.blogspot.com. You also have that Thumbtack, very interesting link, which notes your Find Me teamwork there with the police investigators on to help locate missing persons. And I hope you have a great evening. I appreciate your time this evening.
Thank you so much, Chief. The honor is all mine. I really do appreciate the time. Thank you.
And you will have a new website up by mid-April. That is going to be Anya.
AnyaBriggs.com. And that should be live probably around the 10th of April, AnyaBriggs.com. Thank you.
And we'll be looking for you on The Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura regarding the Dulce and other segments. So have a great evening. Thank you for your time, and thank you, listeners, for your time. We wish you a great weekend. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this evening's broadcast of A Global Focus with guest Anya Briggs. Your time with us is appreciated, and we wish you a great weekend.
Open your mind to the hot streams of UFOs, paranormal, cults, metaphysics, and politics. We always march into the apocalypse every Saturday at 11 p.m. The Church of Mavens.com, Paranormal Radio Network.org. JCon is watching.
Hi, this is Rob Simone, and I want to tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio.